Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of Today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and to strengthen your resolve. We make survival simple, not extreme. We help you thrive today so that you can survive tomorrow. And I like to say a quote by Teddy Roosevelt where he said, "Do what you can with what you have wherever you are." Pretty appropriate. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 53. And Happy New Year to everybody. We are in 2010. How about that? Some of you might be thinking, oh yeah, here we go, another year. We've got some positive things to look forward to, and we have some challenges ahead of us. Well, you've come to the right place, and if you're tuning in to me for the first time, thank you. You've tuned in to a voice of reason. Today's show is going to be another mixed bag, kind of like the last show. And I've got several different topics to talk about. The first topic that I want to start off with is why you need to start doing some of this. And we're a common sense program. I've been getting some good comments about the fact that I keep this practical. I'm going to talk about why you need to start taking some steps to live a more secure life. And what does that mean? You know, that means that doing things today so that you can make your tomorrow better. I know that's a cliche, but, you know, here's what I mean. There's a fellow blogger that we've been helping each other out promote our blogs and shows, and that's Lisa Bedford over at thesurvivalmom.com. And if you are a female listening to this program, I would strongly recommend that you check out thesurvivalmom.com. And there's a lot of guys reading her blog, including me, too. She's got some fabulous things to say. And last week, she asked me to write a little article as to why we should be preparing and what we should be doing. And by the way, Lisa was recently featured in Newsweek. Excellent article and an excellent video that they produced. You got to go to thesurvivalmom.com and look at the video from Newsweek and also check out the article that they wrote about her. Well, she asked me to write something, so I want to share with you what I wrote. If you hadn't had a chance to get over there and do that, I wrote an article, just a really brief one, about how the stink hits the fan for people every single day. You know, a lot of people look at survivalists as extreme people. And we're not extreme. And I say that all the time, that we're common sense folks. And we have everyday problems that hit us. And that's what I mean by preparing. The stink hits the fan every single day for somebody in this country. Every day somebody loses a job, unfortunately. Every day a child faces the collapsing marriage of their parents and an uncertain financial future. How many of us know somebody like that? Every day somebody is injured in a car or an industrial accident, and there's no one to help except a very well-trained civilian that just happened to be on the scene before the paramedics arrived. Every day somebody's spouse, who was the major breadwinner, unexpectedly dies. Every day someone is hit with a medical bill they can't pay, or their home is burglarized or starts on fire. Every day something goes wrong on a carefully planned hunting trip, or somebody's car gets stuck in a blizzard, especially this time of year. Every day a company or a corporation goes bankrupt or they start diving into serious financial trouble and don't get any bailouts from the government, and all of a sudden now people are facing very uncertain financial futures. And every day another politician does something that they were not sent to the Capitol to do. The major point I'm trying to make is not to think of survivalists as weird conspiracy theorists waiting for the next meltdown of society, but think of us as ordinary people planning to deal with everyday events just like those that I've talked about. And you know what the sad truth is? I'll quote Cody Lundeen. He said that only about 7% of Americans prepare accordingly for these types of everyday life events. That means that 93% of our fellow citizens, ladies and gentlemen, are potentially part of the problem rather than being part of the solution. Common sense preparation is what we're all about. And it's what our grandparents did, didn't they? And that's the article that I wrote, very brief, for Lisa's blog. And Lisa, thank you very much for posting that. And that's going to set the stage for the rest of this show. I'm going to borrow some ideas from Furfall's blog. And I'll put a link to Furfall's blog, and I'm going to share some things that because I mean, he's got a lot of common sense stuff that he talks about. Also, he's the author of a book called "Surviving in Argentina: Surviving the Economic Collapse," and the economic collapse that Argentina went through several years back is, I'm sorry to say, could be very, very similar to what we could be facing. And I'm a positive guy, ladies and gentlemen. My training and my background is to be positive. And so I am positive. Here's my positive take on what we're facing. My positive take is this, is that you can do something about it. You can take personal responsibility. All right? You can kick the government to the curb and say, I don't need you anymore. You can kick what's commonly called the system, or the systems of dependency that we have, you can kick them to the curb too and say, get out of here, you're done. So far, that right hasn't been taken away from us, and God help us if it ever is. Still today, when somebody tries to attack you, you can take up whatever arms you have, and I know I have international listeners that listen to this show that live in countries where you can't own guns. There's still plenty of non-gun self-defense mechanism that's out there. You can take up arms and you can say, not here, thug, not in my house, get off of my sidewalk, you're not coming here. We still have that right. We still have the right to choose not to go to the grocery store as often because we grow some of our own food. Because we've turned our yards or a portion of the massive land that we own into a garden. We still have the right to install solar panels so we can have alternative sources of energy. In fact, we're encouraged to do so. We still have the right to care for ourselves medically. And you know what? We even still have the right, so far, to not even have to buy health insurance. Although that may change very soon. We could be forced. It could be shoved down our throat. It could be mandated by the federal government, which is unconstitutional. And by the way, folks, this whole health care bill, if it does finally pass, this whole thing could be declared unconstitutional because the government does not have the right to tell us that we must buy something. That is so far away from the individual liberties that our founding fathers wanted to give us. It's sickening. I hope that enough people get together and form a movement, and I'd be happy to join that movement to say, hey, you know what? This is an unconstitutional thing to do. You cannot do this to us, government. And I'm not trying to get into a political discussion here. But nobody likes to be forced into buying anything. But we still have a lot of rights inalienable. We still have the right to practice any religion we want. You remember the episode I did called Don't Talk to the Police, where I played the audio clip of an attorney and a police officer explaining to you why you should use your Fifth Amendment rights? We still have that. And as the cop said, I love one of the things, if you think about it, you want to go back to listen to that podcast, it was episode number 48. Did you hear the cop say, in other countries, the investigation starts with physical force, it doesn't start with reading you your Miranda rights? Thank God for that. So my positive spin to all the negativity out there is you still have the ability, as I say when I open up the show, to live life on your own terms the way you want to do it. To an extent. I mean, we're still going to get taxed out the wazoo And that's probably, there's probably no end in sight. But you still have the right to take advantage of all the tax deductions that are available to you as well. I got a show coming up, and that's going to be part of it. And so with that, I'm going to conclude the first segment of this show. I've got an interesting audio clip I want to play for you. And I'm not even going to introduce this clip. I'm just going to go ahead and play it. And by the time it's over with, I think you'll be quite shocked. And then, of course, I think you'll get a lot from it. And I'm also going to, if you didn't know who it was or what it was, I'm going to tell you who it was and what it is. You're probably going to know, though, quickly who it is. And I think you're going to like what this person has to say. So, and by the way, let me warn you about some of the language in this audio clip. So if there's some young people listening to this, you don't want to talk like this. But, folks, don't let the language cloud the overall message here. This is a fantastic message. I think you're going to like it. So here you go.
I don't know what to say, really. 3 minutes till the biggest battle of our professional lives all comes down to today. Either we heal as a team, or we're going to crumble. Inch by inch, play by play, till we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen. Believe me. And we can stay here, get the shit kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell. 1 inch at a time. Now, I can't do it for you. I'm too old. I look around, I see these young faces, and I think, I mean, I made every wrong choice a middle-aged man can make. I pissed away all my money, believe it or not. I chased off anyone who's ever loved me. And lately, I can't even stand the face I see in the mirror. You know, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. But you only learn that when you start losing stuff. You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the fucking difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that itch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Hell yeah.
You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him. That's a team, gentlemen. And either we heal now as a team or we will die. as individuals. That's football, guys. That's all it is. Now, what are you gonna do?
Isn't that a survival message? Al Pacino from the movie Any Given Sunday. And folks, you know, this is Bob Main, and this is the next segment of this week's of today's survival show. And I want to talk about building a community. And I want to talk about the people that we have around us. Because as you notice, he said it is about inches. And life is like a game of inches, just like the game of football that he was talking about. And you live and you die and you succeed as a team. So, what are you doing with the people around you and the people that are in your neighborhood and your relatives and your good friends? Are you forming alliances? Are you talking about what each other's skill sets are and what you bring to the table? What you bring to the survival table that maybe somebody else doesn't? And what somebody else brings to the table that maybe you don't? These are the kind of conversations I want to encourage you to have, because you can't do everything. If a disaster strikes, you're definitely going to need the help of other people. And as I've mentioned before in other shows, you're going to have to know how to barter. You're going to have to know what things are worth. Hopefully you've prepared in advance so you have some things to barter. You have to know what your skills are and how valuable they are and what you can offer to other people. If you're a first aid expert, if you're a medic, you need to know what it is you can do, how much that's worth, and you need to talk to people about what your skill levels are. If you're an expert gardener or an expert canner, and I know we have people in our forum who are expert gardeners and expert canners, perhaps that's what you bring to the table. When I was a kid growing up, folks, you know, you heard me tell my story in one of my other shows, I think it was episode number 7 or something like that. It's important that you understand a little bit about my background and how, when I grew up, my parents taught that we had to have the support of friends and the community in order to succeed. I was born in New York City, but by the age of 3, my mom moved me to a small little farm town in Wisconsin, Seymour, Wisconsin to be exact, about 13 miles from Green Bay. And my parents bought, at that time, just a 13-acre piece of land. And on that land, they built a very modest house. And my dad was in the business of selling steel buildings. So obviously, he got a real good deal on a steel building, and that was our barn. And it was also storage. And I was taught to live the self-sufficient life from that point on. Let's see, that was about 1970. Maybe a little bit earlier. Maybe 69. I can't remember. I was taught from that point that we had to do a lot of our own growing of food. And we had to sustain ourselves right then and there, because we didn't have much money. I grew up pretty much, I guess you would say, the lower middle class end of the financial spectrum. And we had a little hobby farm, so to speak. And we raised all kinds of animals that we consumed. We had chickens that gave us our own eggs. We raised duck. Alright, eating duck is great. I love it. And we ate duck eggs. I milked a goat. I milked a goat starting at the age of 11. Every day. We had a goat because my mom believed, first of all, the goats were a heck of a lot cheaper to raise than the cows were, and the milk is better. And we all acquired a taste for goat's milk. It's excellent. I miss it. We raised our own beef. We raised our own pork. We raised our own lambs. My parents taught me how to butcher chickens and how to clean them. And we did that. And what we didn't have, we traded for. I remember, you know, I told you my dad sold steel buildings. And so he traded some services. He traded some of his building services for different products that we needed at the time. Because we didn't have the money to buy them. My dad had a Dodge four-wheel drive pickup. And for those of you who grew up in that part of the United States, you know, we get a lot of snow up there. And my dad had a snow plow on the front of the four-wheel drive pickup that he owned. And my dad used to plow people's driveways, rural driveways that were really long. And sometimes he'd go into town and he'd plow after a major snowstorm. And he would earn extra money that way. He would provide his services to add to bring in extra money. That was bartering, ladies and gentlemen. That's modern-day bartering. I was taught this stuff. I was taught that you try to trade, and you try to save, and you offer services to the community. And if you have a skill, I was taught that you sell that skill, and you get something back that you don't necessarily have the ability to get for yourself. That's survival, folks. And I think today, more than ever, that's going to be so incredibly important that we learn how to do that. And it was on that little hobby farm that I learned to deal with a lot of things. It got so cold in Wisconsin. The snow would get so bad. The freezing, bitter cold. We learned how to survive in that. Our first lawnmower didn't even have a motor. It was one of those push rotary mowers. And we had a large yard. And my brother and I worked hard when we were kids to get that yard mowed with a push rotary mower. And we weren't farmers, we weren't commercial farmers. We didn't really have the capacity nor the means to raise a lot of food and then sell it like commercial farmers. But we produced for ourselves what we needed. We had a quarter of an acre garden. And whatever we didn't have, we were taught that there were other people in the community that had it, and we needed to form an alliance. I guess you could say that was pretty much my first sales training. I realized shortly after that, when I was in high school, that I had the ability to talk to and relate to people. And so I decided at that point that some type of a people business, some type of a marketing and sales business is probably where I was going to end up, and I was right. And if you're listening to this show and you've got some type of people skills, use them. Use them. Find out some avenue. You know, I'm just a normal person, folks. I'm just a normal person who likes to talk about this stuff. As I've mentioned to you, this is my hobby. This show is my hobby. It's not something that I intend to make money with. It's not something that I intend to do full-time or anything like that. But I'm passionate about getting prepared. I'm passionate about things like self-defense. I'm passionate about living a more debt-free life. And having food packed away, and having water packed away, and having the knowledge, and having the 3-day emergency kits in case something goes wrong in your vehicle. I'm passionate about this stuff. I'm passionate about shooting and self-defense. All this is important. These are important skills for people to know that too many people are lacking on. And so I figured I would start this show. And with the help, as I mentioned before, of my good friend Randy Croft, today's survival show was born last summer. And it's a skill that I have. It's a skill that I'm willing to trade and use. And so I hope, I consider everybody who listens to this show my friends. I hope that someday, if I'm ever in a situation where I need and I don't have, that many of my friends who listen to me would help me with something that I don't have. And what I bring to the table are some of the skills that I have. If you need your property defended, you don't have any good firearms to do it, and you live near me, I can probably help you with that. If the stink hits the fan, and you don't have a weapon on you, and you feel like you're in danger somewhere, I can probably help you with that. If the crap hits the fan in my neighborhood, and there's people that can't get to the grocery store for the next 3 to 4 weeks, I can probably help some of them with that. Although I'm taking care of my family first, I can tell you. And if they didn't prepare, I'm going to be able to help them a little bit. I can remember when I was a teenager, we had a lot of chickens on our hobby farm, and they were producing a lot of eggs every day, more eggs than we could consume. And so I remember going with my mother. We would go into town, and we would trade those eggs, and my mom used to like to raise golden retrievers. That was one of her hobbies. She loved dogs. And there was somebody in town who was a veterinarian, and we had some problems, some medical problems with our dogs, and we didn't have any money to pay the vet bill. So I remember trading eggs for veterinary services for our dogs when I was a kid. My mom and I did that. Those are the types of things, folks. You know, and so I've heard a lot of people say, well, I don't have a whole lot of money to prepare. You don't need a lot of money. When somebody says, I don't have any money, I think to myself, you're the kind of person I'm looking for. You're the best kind of person to be listening to this show. If you don't have the money, you're a prime suspect, or a prime prospect, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say suspect. I'm thinking of that episode number 48, Don't Talk to the Police. Never mind. You are a prime prospect for this show if money is tight. Because in this show, we talk about practical ways to prepare, and some of the things we talk about don't cost anything, or they are very low in cost. So, with that said, that completes the second segment of this week's show. Now, I'm going to get into the third segment here in a minute, because I've got some good information to share with you, a little bit from Fur Falls' blog, as I mentioned, and I have a little bit of more information from somebody else's blog that I'll tell you about in a minute. Let's take a brief intermission. I want you to listen to a little bit of music here, just kind of clear your mind and think about some of what we talked about in the first two segments. Listen to a couple minutes worth of good music during this intermission, and then we'll come back with segment number three. I'm going to talk more about building community. I'm going to talk more about how to work with other people to help you survive. So here you go, and I'll be back soon.
He came from Providence, one in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea. She heard about a place, people were smiling, spoke about the red man's ways and how they loved the land. They came from everywhere to the great divide, seeking a place to stand or a place to hide. Down in the crowded bars, out for a good time, can't wait to tell you all what it's like up there. They call it paradise, I don't know why. Somebody made the mountains low while the town got across the desert, through the canyons of the coast, to the Malibu, where the pretty people play, hungry for power, to light their neon way, giving things to do. Some rich men came and raped the land, nobody caught them. Put up a bunch of ugly boxes, Jesus, people bought them. They called it paradise, watch the hazy sun sink in the sea.
Okay, folks, Bob Main back here for segment number three and the final segment of this week's show. And I'm back in my home office now. The first two segments I was recording from my vehicle on the way home from a trip. And so for segment number three, what I'd like to talk about is how to use community and how to practice what we call mutual preparedness. Basically, the importance of having friends in an emergency. We can't go at this alone, folks. And one of the mistakes that a lot of survivalists make, in my opinion, and a lot of people who wish to be more prepared, is they try to be loners. They try to be these lone wolf types that feel that they can go it alone. And I disagree with that. I think you have to have some ability to be able to get along in your community and be able to share resources back and forth. So I found an interesting blog post, an interesting article actually written by Claire Wolf in backwoodshome.com on their website, and I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes so you'll be able to read the full article, but I'm going to kind of summarize and do a little bit of paraphrasing, put some of my own into this as well. But she talks about the importance of having friends in an emergency, and she talks about emphasizing, first of all, the practical, which is what I really like, because this, I try to keep this a practical show. And Claire talks about that, you know, in a lot of disasters, the aftermath of the disaster gives us a perfect opportunity to go to our neighbors and do a reality check. And I've heard, I've talked about that before. You've heard me talk about the aftermath of a disaster being sometimes worse than the disaster itself. And it gives you the chance to start asking questions like, you know, what could we use? You know, what am I out of that maybe somebody else might have? And she talks about beforehand, as part of your preparations, developing sort of, she uses the words a mutual preparedness league, and I kind of like that. Coming to agreements with people ahead of time. If one person's good at storing gasoline and the other person is good at storing food, you know, perhaps you can come to a mutual agreement if you know that person well enough. And even if you want to do this, in my opinion, if you have relatives and friends that are close by, maybe one's better at first aid skills and building up some kind of a medical kit. Maybe the other is better at self-defense, like I was mentioning earlier in the show. You could have one person in your neighborhood or one relative that's good at gardening and the other one that's good at raising animals. And I think if you talk about this and discuss this ahead of time and talk about what each of you brings to the table and what might happen if the stink hits the fan, who's going to be able to provide each other with the other services? The point I'm trying to make here is going it alone, in my humble opinion, can be kind of reckless and dangerous, because I don't think there's any one person or any one family that can provide literally everything that they're going to need to survive, especially if it's a major disaster. Minor disaster might be one thing, but a major disaster, I think it's going to be kind of tough. And why do you want to go it alone? If you have people that you do know and are trust and they're like-minded people, maybe they're members of the forum. Maybe some members of the forum live near you. Or maybe there are some other people who are not members of our forum or don't listen to this show, but you know that they're the survival-minded type of person. Talk to them in advance. I've done this. There's friends of mine. Some of them are on this forum. Some of them are not. We've talked about this in advance. What's going to happen if the stink hits the fan? Who's going to be able to provide what services? And that one example that Claire Wolf mentions in her article, you know, one of the things she talks about is instead of selling your farm fresh eggs, if you're the kind of person that has chickens that produce eggs, or if you're growing produce or honey or whatever, instead of selling that, try figuring out what it is your neighbor might have that you can barter with. And like I said, barter with them now. Why wait until a disaster? Do like we did when I was a kid. Barter for services that you could use now. now or for other items that you can't produce, but maybe you can start stocking up. Another idea that she writes about is getting involved in a food co-op or create a food co-op of your own. If your neighbors are not receptive to the notion of disaster preparedness, and a lot of them might not be because, again, we're these radical extremists, right? They might be open to the idea of organically grown crops or hormone-free meats, things like that. And you know, when I was a kid, that's the other thing that my mother and my family did, is that we raised our food and grew our produce organically. And we had a circle of friends that believed in non-chemicals in our food, that believed in growing things without the pesticides and the chemicals and crap like that. And so we got together as a community and we traded. You know, if we had some organic poultry and they had some organic produce that we didn't have, we traded. The end result is the same. The end result being you establish a cooperating network based on one element, and that would be food in this case. Maybe somebody that's in your inner circle has a pickup truck and others don't. Like, for example, that applies to me. I don't have a pickup, but I have a lot of good friends and a relative that does have a pickup. The truck owner, the person who does have a pickup, could offer to transport some of the purchases of the preparedness goods for a fee. And you can talk about this even before the stink hits the fan and after it does. You know, if you know somebody that has a truck, if your close friends or somebody near you has a truck, you can say, hey, look, all right, if something happens, this is what you're going to agree to do with your truck, and what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to stand by your property and I'm going to help you protect it. I'll have my weapons ready to help you protect it, for example. All right? There's probably a whole number of things you can think of, but that's an example I wanted to throw out there. The other point in Claire's article that I really like, this is my favorite point that she makes, is she encourages us to sign up for and commute to a lot of skill-building classes together. And that could be anything. That could be car maintenance. It could be a canning class or a gardening class. It could be a first aid class. It could be a defensive shotgun class. But she makes the point that staying motivated is always easier when you're committed to somebody else that's also interested in the activity. And I liken that to the same thing when it comes to losing weight. And, you know, when I was on a weight loss and a workout binge, and folks, I dropped, it was slightly over 30 pounds in about a year and a half. And, that, you know, you've heard of a lot of stories that have people have lost 30 pounds a lot quicker than that. But I took my time. I wanted to do it healthy. I wanted to do it naturally. I went to the gym and I followed a very strict diet regimen, and it was not, I didn't use fancy chemicals. I didn't use, you know, these fad diets or anything. I did it the old fashioned way. I exercised more and I ate more. You might be thinking, what? What do you mean you ate more? Oh, that's right. I ate more. That's the old fashioned way of losing weight. When I say I ate more, it means I ate several times a day. I ate low calorie. I kept my metabolism up. I snacked between meals on healthy snacks so that I didn't gorge when I ate. But I had to go it alone at first. Now, my accountability partner, when I was losing weight, ended up being some of the best money I've ever spent in my life on preparedness, and that is I paid for a personal trainer. Well, that personal trainer actually worked out with me, and that was my accountability partner. And what Claire is talking about here is when she says sign up for and commute to skill-building classes, that means basically when you do it together, you can stay motivated because you have somebody that you're committed to that also is interested in the activity that can hold you accountable. And that accountability, folks, is so important, and that's what really helped me. And I think that if you start thinking about some of this stuff, is how can I take some classes with somebody so that we can grow and do this together, I think you're going to see more positive results that way. And another good point that she also makes she says, start consciously offering to do things for your neighbors. And then ask them to do things for you. Even if you can actually take care of it yourself, even if it's actually something you can do, if you start talking to your neighbors or your friends or your relatives and asking them to help you in return for you helping them with something, it's a good way to get to know each other's skill sets, to know each other, to know what you each other can bring to the table, and who you can trust and what you can trust them to do if the stink hits the fan. And with those people that you do trust, talk to them frankly and talk to them openly about others in your neighborhood and those that are in your circle of acquaintance who might present some of the problems in a crunch time and some of those who might be clueless, and also identify those who might be useful, who might be part of the solution. The potential problem people might be innocent old ladies, for example, or they could be disabled people, or they might be families with small children, or they might be families that don't have much money, that are living in tough financial situations, but they're the people who need the help. So I guess I really shouldn't call them problems, shame on me. They're the people that need the help, and they're the people that you're going to have to take care of. The problems are the freeloaders. The ones that might be the real troublemakers are the freeloaders or the known thieves or the known people that are going to be trying to steal from you and take from you and not wanting to do anything for themselves. Those are the ones you need to identify, as well as identifying the people who might be truly in need, the older folks, the disabled folks, the families with small children, and so on and so forth. That's also something that you want to start with your circle of influence, start identifying. And finally, the last point that's in her article that I really like a lot is that if there's somebody that's close to you that just doesn't feel like they're able to start preparing themselves in any way, shape, or form for any kind of an emergency, figure out if there's a way. Try to find out what their hot button is. Figure out if there's a way that you can change that. Use some gentle persuasion. I've talked about in some of my other shows building common ground and asking questions and using humor and things like that. Don't badger them. But by being helpful and gently persuading them and maybe using your own example, people might say at first that they're too poor, they don't have any money. As I mentioned to you, those are the kind of people that I'm looking for. They might say they don't have any skills, all right? Oh, there's just nothing that I can do. There's just nothing that I'm very good at. Or I'm just not interested in any of that doomsday crap. That's just not for me. But the thing I want you to realize is just like everybody is actually vulnerable to some form of catastrophe, in that same way that they're vulnerable, they can also make some type of preparation. There's got to be something that they can do. You know, I mean, even if it's something as simple as putting together a basic first aid kit or storing 2 weeks of food, even if it's something basic like that, you know, even if it's only buying a little lantern at a garage sale, you know, or starting to put away some cases of macaroni and cheese, ramen noodles, and beef jerky or something like that. You know, or even if it's just going down to a garage sale and finding some good deals on flashlights or buying a simple water filter from somewhere or finding a way to purify water. Even if, you know, most people can do that. They have to just be woken up. And again, I've mentioned it many times before. Your own personal example is going to speak far louder than anything else that you could do or say. So remember your example when you're trying to build the community of help that you're going to need after any kind of an emergency. And so I'll put a link to that article that Claire Wolf wrote, but there's some really good points in there. It should only take you about 5 minutes to read the whole article. I urge you to go to that link and check it out. So as I bring this show to a close, let me remind you what Al Pacino said. Sometimes the difference between winning and losing is only inches. And it's the same thing with surviving any kind of an emergency. And you know, and I told you, I like to be positive. And this year, you're going to get a lot of positive type shows from me. I'm not going to focus a whole lot on the negatives. You know, but folks, sometimes I tell you what, it's the people who quit. It's the people who quit that are typically the ones who don't survive. It's the people that just don't lack the will. Sometimes if just a person has the sheer will to live in any kind of an emergency, they're going to be the ones that are going to survive. And we don't have to wait until the stink hits the fan. That's my point. Why don't you develop that sheer will right now? Right now, today, why don't you just develop that sheer will to succeed? Why don't you develop that sheer determination? The difference between winning and losing, the inches that makes the, I'm not going to repeat the word that Al Pacino used, okay? All right? But it makes the freaking difference between someone who's a winner and someone who, I don't want to use the word loser, but someone who doesn't succeed or who doesn't survive. And we don't know what the next disaster is that's going to hit us. And there's really no sense in worrying about it and dwelling about it. Just prepare. Don't worry. Get busy. And ladies and gentlemen, if you've never thought about any kind of preparedness at all before ever in your life, I just want you to do one thing. Okay, just do one thing in the next 3 months. And if you do this within 3 months, you are considered somebody who is either a survivalist or somebody who is a secure-minded person. And that one thing is, I just want you to pick a small debt. All right? I don't care what it is. Just find something that you owe, somebody you owe that's less than $100, for example. All right? A small debt. Now, I'm thankful that with the exception of my house, I don't have a small debt like that that I could pay because I've paid them all off already. But if you do, just go pay it off. All right? Wipe that off of your worry list. Get rid of that debt. Swipe it away and say, all right, it's gone forever. Just doing that one simple step, if you do that in the next 3 months, just that one simple step starts you on the road to what we call being a prepper, a survivalist, a secure living type of a person. It starts you on that road to saying, I am going to take control of my life. I'm going to take control of it right now. And I'm going to quit letting a bunch of other pinheads run my life for me. I'm going to quit being a slave to every system that's out there. Just paying off a simple little debt says, I'm going to quit being a slave financially. A slave to the lender. All right? The borrower is a slave to the lender. If I can go ahead and borrow that from Dave Ramsey. That's the most profound thing that he taught me when I took his course. The borrower is a slave to the lender. Just doing that, just a little bit of breaking free of paying off a small little debt, and you're on your way. Next, just set a goal of having 2 weeks worth of food stored. All right, just enough to support you and your family for 2 weeks. And then you're on your way. And this stuff gets addicting, folks, I'm telling you. It really does. It gets addicting. And you know what really gets addicting? Is the good feeling that you get. The good peace of mind that you get when you start to do this. So thank you for tuning in. And thank you for listening to episode number 53 of today's Survival Show. And my name is Bob Main. I'm your host. And we, on this show, try to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms. And I hope that today you've figured out what I meant and what I always try to impart when I say on your own terms. And we try to help you strengthen your resolve. Thrive today so you can survive tomorrow. And I'll close by saying, Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thank you for tuning in to this week's show. I'm Bob Main, and I'll catch you next time.